My guest at this time is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. He's now with the American Enterprise Institute. He's been a regular guest of ours in 2013, talking about the major international headlines, from the ousting of the Muslim Brotherhood government led by Mohamed Morsi in Egypt, to the U.S. waffling over what to do in Syria, to a nuclear agreement in Iran, and much more. And, sir, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. Glad to be with you again.
Well, let's start with what happened in Egypt. We obviously saw what happened a little over 2 years ago with the Arab Spring, the ouster of Mubarak, ultimately the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood. It did not take long, however, for the people in Egypt to return to the streets and demand change. The military obliged, but it was a move that the Obama administration didn't seem to be very happy about. Why do you believe that they weren't, and what do you suspect will be the policy there going forward?
Well, you know, as we come to the end of the year, we have the Egyptian military back in power, which is essentially where we were at the beginning of the Arab Spring. And yet, because of the administration's inept handling of events in Egypt, we have now succeeded in alienating every major element of Egyptian society. The military don't trust the Obama administration. They think they're pro-Muslim Brotherhood. The Brotherhood doesn't trust the administration. The pro-Western, pro-democracy forces pull their hair out when they think about how the administration has handled this. And the consequence is we're at our lowest influence in Egypt in decades. The Russians are now back in trying to sell weapons, which they haven't been in 40 years. So it's hard to imagine a worse outcome for the United States than where we are now, with basically no change in the government, but neither the government nor the opposition giving us much credibility.
What type of government do you expect the people to put into power next year?
Well, I think the vast majority of Egyptians wanted some stability back in their domestic situation. Their economy had gone into the tank because of all the turmoil. Tourism was down to an extraordinarily low level, obviously no foreign investment coming in. And while the Brotherhood, the Muslim Brotherhood, probably had majority support, most Egyptians just wanted an end to the political turmoil. They wanted jobs. They wanted the economy back up. And I think that's what the military will give them. It will give them stability and hopefully for Egypt's economy, a return of investment in tourism. So I don't count the Brotherhood out. They've been through this saga for many, many years, but the military's been through the same saga, and they hold the upper hand. And I don't think this time they're going to give it away very easily.
To the north, across the Mediterranean Sea, of course, we saw what played out in Syria and the back and forth between the rebels, which many here in our government thought were largely populated by moderates. As the year went on, that seemed to be proven incorrect, and that it's mostly radicals of one sort or another against, obviously, a proxy regime in Syria that pledges allegiance to Iran. And so it was hard to determine which side to cheer for. After the use of chemical weapons, the United States tried to lead a military response. There was not an appetite for that on the international stage or here at home. And ultimately, it got resolved because of a comment Secretary Kerry kind of made offhand at a press conference. What's the aftermath of how that played out?
Well, this is another situation where the United States has absolutely failed to achieve its objectives. The president said his objective was removing the Assad regime from power. That obviously hasn't happened. If anything, momentum now is in the direction of the regime. The president said that if he saw the use of chemical weapons, that would be a red line that would prompt American intervention. Chemical weapons were used. There was no American intervention. So this is a circumstance, unfortunately, whether you agree with the administration's policies or not, what they've done has left the United States, again, in a much weaker position. Iran is strengthened. Russia is strengthened. Enemies of the United States are strengthened. The terrorists are strengthened. And we are weakened. So I would judge Syria to be a record of near complete failure for the Obama administration.
You mentioned Iran and Russia, and I want to get your thoughts on both of those. First, with the Iranians, how much of a factor was how Syria got dealt with a factor in the fact that there was a nuclear agreement with the Iranians?
Well, I think since the beginning of the Obama administration, the president has believed that he could find a way to deal diplomatically with Iran's nuclear weapons program. Contrary to the reality that Iran's been after deliverable nuclear weapons for over 20 years, it's a one of their highest national security priorities. But notwithstanding that reality, President Obama thought he could cut a deal with them. And I think he understood that for the Ayatollahs in Tehran, keeping the Assad regime in power was one of their highest priorities. And he didn't want to do anything really to jeopardize the possibility of negotiating with Iran by taking really strong steps against Assad. So the president, this is the president having an internal inconsistency in his own foreign policy objectives, but the net-net is that Iran was able, over the course of the past year, to provide extensive assistance to the Assad regime against the Syrian opposition, financing through Revolutionary Guards officers helping Assad out, through arming and equipping Hezbollah, the terrorist group from Lebanon that came into Syria to help prop up Assad. Iran is emerging stronger as well as a result of the success of the Assad regime, while at the same time, even more importantly, Iran's nuclear weapons program has gone on unimpeded even after the Geneva Agreement.
What do you suspect will happen after this six-month tentative deal is up? Will there be a permanent agreement, or do you think we'll find out that Iran was not honoring the original one?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt they're not going to honor this agreement. They have made, in any event, only superficial, easily reversible concessions on the nuclear program. I think what Iran wanted was relief from the economic sanctions. You know, the administration and its supporters say the sanctions brought Iran to the table. Well, yes, they did, to get relief from the sanctions, not to make concessions on the nuclear weapons program. And I think Iran scored a major psychological victory in Geneva. I think they split Europe from the United States. You now have a lot of European businesses that want to get back into that Iranian market. And I think once the sanctions loosen up, it's very hard to ratchet them back. So Iran got what it wanted. It protected its nuclear program, but at the same time, it got some relief, exact quantity unknown, but it got some relief from the economic sanctions. The United States came away with essentially nothing.
Let's move to Russia now. You mentioned that they're now more involved in Egypt than they have been in decades. Putin clearly played a critical leading role in how the crisis in Syria, or at least the diplomatic crisis in Syria, played out. And, of course, he hosted Edward Snowden and all sorts of other things this year that frustrated the United States. So how much has he gained in stature this year, and where do we stand in confrontation with the Russians heading into 2014?
Well, I think throughout the Middle East, as we've been discussing, they are at their highest level of influence in four decades, and in the broader policy that Putin has been pursuing to reestablish Russia as a superpower, to reestablish Russian hegemony within the space of the former Soviet Union, we can see as the year closes that Putin has now gained the upper hand in Ukraine, whereas I think the overwhelming majority of the people of that country want to be tied to the West. They want to be part of the NATO alliance at some point. Putin's trying to drag them back under Russian influence, and with this deal to provide $15 billion of assistance and other things, I think the direction that Ukraine's taking, unfortunately, is away from the West back toward Russia. That's not inevitable, but it is a situation that's been made much more difficult by the near total lack of attention that the administration has given to what the people of the Ukraine have been in the streets asking for, which is closer ties to the West.
Last question before we let you go, Mr. Ambassador, and the answer could be largely what we've already talked about here, but what do you see as the biggest foreign policy challenges heading into the new year?
Well, I think the ones we've talked about, but there are many, many others. I think it's part of the problem with the Obama administration's utter lack of attention to national security issues. You know, China has been making aggressive, almost belligerent moves in the East China Sea, declaring a air defense identification zone over disputed territory way, way beyond what would normally be a legitimate air defense zone. It's made territorial claims in the South China Sea, the effect of which, if they were successful at them, would be to take what are currently very important international waters through which a lot of international trade travels, take that territory and make it into a Chinese lake. This is yet another situation where the administration in Washington has been on the sidelines watching this happen. And this is the consequence of an inattentive, weak administration. American interests are going by the boards, and other countries see this weakness and lack of attention, and you know they recalibrate their policies accordingly to take advantage of it. So I'm afraid we're in for pretty heavy sailing here over the next 3 years.
Well, we'll certainly be watching, and we look forward to having you with us to give us your assessment. Sir, thank you so much for all your assistance throughout the year, and we wish you all the best this Christmas and New Year season.
Well, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you and all your listeners, and look forward to talking to you next year.
Thank you, sir, very much. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, now with the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.